with Dr. Thomas Bass, a physician by occupation. Dr. Bass, when did you first arrive in Ypsilanti?
To stay in 1943.
1943?
October the 1st, 1943.
Uh-huh. Where did you come from?
River Rouge, Michigan. You don't mean my place of birth. You mean where that I come from directly.
Yes, where were you? Okay, where were you born? When were you born?
Well, I was born in Paterson, New Jersey, 1T, P-A-T-E-R-S-O-N, September the 14th, 1910.
Why did you come to Ypsilanti?
Well, I had been working here and there, this one and that one, and it was time to get on out and practice. I suppose on my own, for one reason, and I just wasn't making a living there at River Rouge. I was a resident in medicine, and I practically ran the hospital down there in River Rouge, but it wasn't a very remunerative situation. I didn't get make any a sum of money that really I thought was in keeping with the amount of time I put into it.
Why did
the amount
you
of time I've been in medicine, plus the fact I wasn't learning anything either. Well, I came out to Ipsy for two reasons. One, I needed to get out, as I mentioned, just in general. And I heard that there was need for, I hate to say black doctors in this area. I don't think that, Dr. Clark was here, but I'm not sure he was terribly active. And he was probably the only black physician in the county of Washington on practice at that time.
Who was this?
Dr. Samuel Clark. But then I wanted to go to the School of Public Health up at Ann Arbor. So my thought was to practice just 1 hour a night and go to school most of the day, which I did. Consequently, I didn't do too much in either place. But I finished. I got a master's degree in public health, which I have to say, because of, I think, largely racial prejudices, it was essentially a waste of time. All these degrees just don't mean anything unless you really can use them to help yourself, of course.
Along with that question, what is your educational background training?
The usual schools along the way. I went to the public schools in Paterson, New Jersey, as far as I could go, through high school, and I went to Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, which was founded in 1856, which makes it the oldest school for the higher education. Black. We say black now, but then we say Negroes in the world. And I graduated from there in 1933, primarily working chemistry and those kinds of subjects in order to get to medical school. But I had to stay out because of finances, so I didn't get to medical school until 1934. And I graduated from Meharry, that's down in Tennessee, which is one of the two predominantly black medical schools in the, at least it was at that time, in the, I suppose, the world. Not considering those ancient schools that blacks probably had many years ago. I got the MD in 1938. And I interned at Freedman's Hospital in Washington, D.C. It's now called Howard University Hospital, or the Hospital of Howard University Medical School. But then it was Freedman's, capital F-R-E-E-D. M-E-N apostrophe S. I stayed there 18 months for various reasons, and services on OBGYN. We had a lot.
large open service there. And the other one was, I guess, the ambulance, which was a complete waste of time, too. And, of course, in the emergency room, we worked 24-hour shifts, beyond 24 hours, off 24 hours. I put in a lot of time in some other area. I'm trying to think what it was. It must have been just general medicine. And this was because the internship then was in a state of, flux, I guess you can say. They were trying to develop it better. I guess all medical schools at that time were trying to make the internship more meaningful. They were trying to, I suppose, is that word where they want them to conform to about the same thing in all medical schools. Well, anyhow, that's what they were trying to do there at Freedman's. So, consequently, I spent a lot of time in those areas I mentioned. I can tell you a whole lot about that, of course, about how I feel about it now. It seems to me it wasn't a very learning experience, but once you keep in mind, too, at that time, there were only five so-called first-class hospitals where a black could get a decent internship, say nothing of a residency. And Freedman's happened to have been one, but like so many organizations or things of that type, just because it happens to be named as one of those where you can things are supposed to be outstanding in various aspects of medical training, it doesn't necessarily make it so. And I'm sorry I have to say that about Freedman's. After staying there 18 months, I worked especially in venereal disease control, too. I developed kind of interest in that, and also in, therefore, in urology. And first-class internships were hard to get, but residencies and the various specialties were even more difficult for a black to get. I had hoped I could have gotten up to the Harlem Hospital, but because my home was just across the river from New York City, and I had visited over there with one or two of my high school classmates who happened to have been white, and of course you get promises, but when the time comes to deliver, couldn't deliver. Well, they were moderate house officers. I mean, moderate standing. They weren't like the administrators. They weren't anything less. So I didn't get to Harlem, but that's where I really wanted to get, where there was ever so much training that could have been obtained. And, you know, being Harlem at that time, being a Harlem hospital at that time, up there in Harlem, there were all sorts of chances to learn to do this and that, or be trained in this and that and the other. The majority of those, no question about it. All the patients practically were black. So I got a chance to work at Lincoln University, where I graduated from, as a school physician. And also I was supposed to lecture in one class in freshman hygiene, which I did. And the thing that got me about that was all that doggone laboratory work that I had to go over again. They wanted me to teach a couple of lab classes. Well, I did it. But there wasn't any money there either, which, well, you just weren't able to make the sums of money at that time as an intern or even a resident as they do now. So I stayed there a year, and another fellow was supposed to come in. I went there before him just to fill in until he came. And I thought maybe he wouldn't come and I would kind of stay there a little longer and go out and practice in that area, Chester County, Pennsylvania, which is a beautiful country, about 50 miles south of Philadelphia. So I got a job in Philadelphia with a physician in practice, and he had somebody else working, but I didn't stay there too long because the training I had wouldn't allow me to keep up with the speed with which they were able to take care of people. For example, we'd get to the office on a Saturday evening at 5 o'clock, and by 12 o'clock, we'd seen 100 people, or 100 people would have been seen. I couldn't work that fast, so I was invited to stay if I wanted to, but I couldn't. I wouldn't be paid anything. It would just supposed to have been more experience, but experience in what? Then I think I went back to Jersey. I went back to New Jersey to try to get a hold of some money to open up an office there in Patterson, my birthplace. And the need there was for physicians too. But despite the fact that the bank with which I used to do business, Second National Bank there in Patterson, they knew me well because they weren't but so many blacks in town. For example, in my class in high school, there were about 400 who graduated with me at midterm, and there were only two of us blacks in the class. And that was in one of the high schools. And I think there might have been one black in the other high school. Well, anyhow, these people knew me, but that didn't mean anything because I couldn't borrow. I couldn't borrow, I think I wanted $250 or something to buy a car. I couldn't borrow that, to say nothing about borrowing some money to fix the old house that we had there. So I had this friend acquaintance who was in medical school with me. I was a year ahead of him, though, who wanted to get into surgery, and they needed a resident in medicine at the Trinity Hospital in Detroit. So upon his request, and after thinking about it, I wasn't doing anything except walking around the streets. Drove out to Detroit in this 29 Chevrolet that I was able to get. I forgot what I paid. I think I was $25. And had some difficulties on the way, but I won't tell you about those. Those are something I need to write about one of these years. And I stayed there for a short time, and I guess people then used to say I was quite rash and brash and everything else because I couldn't get along with the fellow who was the owner, and one of the owners, and he was the chief administrator of the hospital at that time. But this allowed, Dr. Arrington was the man who was at the Trinity Hospital and went to surgery. He's turned out to be quite an obstetrician and gynecologist. But I relieved him so that he could get into that area. And as I say, I soon moved on out to River Rouge, where I heard you could make a few dollars more. That hospital was owned and administered by Dr. Samuel B. Milton, who was quite a principal fellow. But there was no money. I think they paid me $90 a month.
What was the name of the hospital out there?
Sumby, S-U-M-B-Y, Sumby Hospital. That was named after a Dr. Sumby who was up in Saginaw, who had died prematurely, I think you might say. But that was Dr. Milton's brother-in-law. Dr. Milton died, of course, about a year ago. His brother died about a year before that, whom I knew very well because one was in medical school with me. So I stayed there 3 years, and there was a wealth of knowledge to be learned, but it had to, it should have been formalized in some way. There wasn't anybody to teach me. I had to pick it all up myself, and a lot of it, I have to admit, was by trial and error. I have to admit that. For example, I think about a day or so after I got there, Dr. Milton hadn't had a vacation in a long time. He took off in his car, and I didn't see him for about 2 or 3 months later, so running the hospital was my job. And we had some good experiences down there. I have to admit, I learned I put into practice a lot of this theory to a great degree. So there wasn't anybody really to teach me anything. And I hadn't had any significant amount of surgical training, and what little I obtained, I had to learn all that myself, such as tonsillectomies and so forth, ENTs. I'd spent a fair amount of time, too, in orthopedics and at Friedman's, so I was kind of adept, you know, putting on them casts and taking care of fractures, relatively simple fractures. But I just wasn't making any real definite headway towards really my life's work. I needed to get out, and despite his admonishments and advice about staying there and starting in practice there, I decided not to, because I didn't want to be known as Dr. Milton's doctor. I wanted to, as I mentioned, get into the School of Public Health, so I moved out here. And all while I was at Sunday Hospital, the war started. But these are not sour grapes, and yet they are in a way. It's God's honest truth. I tried to get into the Army. In fact, I tried to get into the Army while I was at Friedman's, or soon after graduation, because as a medical officer, you were given the rank of first lieutenant, at that time at least, and the pay was $3,200 a year, which was like manna from heaven. And here I was earning at Friedman's $10 a month, not over $10 a month. That was the money I had. So I went out up Ann Arbor and opened up here, up there in the project on the side of the hill, and tried to have hours, 1 hour every night.
Hill what?
Well, I was practicing medicine.
Okay, up in Ann Arbor?
No, here in Ypsilanti, up on the side of the hill there, in the Park Ridge, they call that project up there. I had my first office up there. And, well, I first had an office in the house, and of course, I soon got married. And
what were some of your observations of race relations in Ypsilanti?
Well, at that time, certainly they were. I have to admit, kind of strained. The racial relations that I had experienced were strained all over. Certainly in Washington, I can tell you a lot of tales about Washington. I happened to have been in Washington too. During the time that Marian Anderson, you know, was invited to sing, and the Daughters of the American Revolution would not allow her to sing in Constitution Hall, so Mrs. Roosevelt, through Mr. Ickes, the Secretary of the Interior, made available the setting in front of the Lincoln Memorial. It was a beautiful event. I couldn't make it that day. I had to be on call, but I had clippings. God knows what happened to it.
So life in Ypsilanti wasn't...
No, Ypsilanti, all of the black people lived on the south side of Michigan Avenue. Many of them still do, but it was practically 100%. At that time, the blacks who went up to Eastern could not stay in the dormitories.
Was Eastern known as Michigan Normal then?
Michigan Normal, that's right. They could not stay in the dormitories. And same thing over in Ann Arbor. They had a house over there, I don't know what that street is, Ann Street, where the black women stayed. They used to call it the Bee House. I don't know why. Well, you know, we didn't call ourselves black, so I don't think it meant black house at that time. But those were the only, on-campus facilities for blacks to stay. The Ainsworth subdivision, which is right across here from the office, was a no man's land if you were black. You weren't even supposed to walk through there. Mm-hmm. Although I chanced it once or twice, nobody ever bothered me. And where the office is now, well, there were a lot of white folks, of course, went through the houses and weren't built, but white folks were all around, and I didn't build the office until I'd been here, I guess, 4 or 5 years later. What else can I tell you about the situation? Well, there were no black councilmen initially.
Who were the black leaders in the
the black leaders, I think you might, I can think of Ben Neely and Frank Seymour. Frank is dead. Frank.
What were they specific occupations?
Well, they were kind of politicians, more or less. Ben worked for a cleaning establishment, but Frank, I don't know what the devil Frank did. Frank probably worked out at the bomber plant, I'm not sure. The Kaiser Fraser at the time. No, it was the Ford bomber plant at that time. And let's see, John Burton, I put him up there. John was old time rabble rouser, so called. And I think the ministers. Ministers just weren't in the forefront. This is Frank. It seems to be that way now.
As the politicians, what were the role of the three you just mentioned? Were they councilmen or what?
No, they weren't councilmen, but they got together and elected councilmen. They elected, I think, Frank first. Oh, I forgot Amos Washington. Amos Washington, you have to say, was a leader, too. I don't know whether or not it was Amos and Frank together. No, it was just one. And then the people kind of outsmarted themselves. They wanted to, that was, I think, in that large type of election. Then they wanted to elect people just from the wards. You know, they changed the system around. And I think, seems to me, we had two black councilmen there. But anyhow, I remember when Amos was elected, he got the highest number of votes, it seems to me, and usually that person would have been the mayor, but not so was Amos.
Well, what role did black ministers play? I mean, were their role minimal?
They had the church services.
But no prominent role in providing leadership for the community.
No, not at that time that I can think of. I went to church because that was the way I'd been brought up. I had to go to church at home and kind of spilled on over. I can't recall any of them really being in the forefront at that particular time. There's Francois, who was, I think, even president of the NAACP, and I think during his, or it must have been during his term, that the restrictive covenants were outlawed by the Supreme Court of the United States. There used to be a family, there was at that time a family down the street by the name of Wright. And I think people were just about trying to put him out of the house, just down the streets there. But along came the Supreme Court to decide that restrictive covenants based on race were illegal. At least they could no longer be upheld. Francois used to be quite a realtor around here, and he was I think you have to call him a leader, too.
Was Francois black?
He was black, yeah. All these people I mentioned black. I didn't. Okay. The white folks, it seems to me, were absolutely negative so far as racial relations went. We were in another world, and the kids, I feel sorry for them, as they must have had some problems because they would have to live in two worlds. When they were home here, down here, okay, this was black and Negro. When they went over there to high school, well, it was another world altogether. And some of them did fairly well.
But this was a difficult situation for black kids that grew up in this community, I don't understand.
I think it was a relatively difficult situation. Well, it seems so. I can see it so much better than some of you younger people because a lot of changes took place and changes which had far-reaching, you know, consequences.
What were some of those changes that happened?
Well, you probably know them better than I, like the various revolutions that we had, which were probably started by, at least were furthered by Martin Luther King.
Right.
And the NAACP seemed to assume a more positive role in breaking down or making some inroads against segregation.
Could you give me a short scenario in terms of how, you know, that Martin Luther King era, the civil rights era, your perceptions of how that may have impacted and facilitated change in Ypsilanti?
Well,
changes here.
I can remember one thing particularly in which I worked, and that was the time that them clowns bombed that church and killed all them kids. And I was working kind of closely with the NAACP, and it was my job to kind of organize something as a, well, it was an outcry against such. Mm-hmm. So we had quite a march, and everything went along real swell. I don't know where the program is that I put together, but I saw it around the house some time ago. Maybe I can find it. And we had the cooperation then of the ministers. Practically all of the ministers cooperated well. We started at the Brown Chapel Methodist Church and walked on, I don't know which way, walked on down through the main streets in town, and there were no incidents whatsoever. We also worked with the formation of the Civil Rights Commission here, which I'm sorry turned to be a whitewashing organization, because I think I was sold down the river on that, frankly, and I can't mention, I don't know who it was now, but it was my thought that we should have one, because this was a popular thing in those days, the Human Rights Commission. They had one in Ann Arbor, and it's amazing, everything that they had in Ann Arbor, we used to always try to have here in Ipsy, but they, except for that. So I was a member of the Chamber of Commerce too, and I was on the, I guess I was on the Civic Affairs Committee, lo and behold. And I couldn't sit there and just listen to them talk about the Dutch Elm disease and the toilets downtown without getting into the fact that we needed a Civil Rights Commission. I thought maybe we could make some headway there. But they also pointed to the commission, Mrs. Milford, who was Dr. Milford's wife. He's died, he's dead, but she's now in the regions up at Eastern. And she and I certainly were on opposite sides of the fence. She wanted me to give a definition of an Italian word, ghetto or something. Why do you have to call it a ghetto? What is a ghetto? So I could give the definition because it so happened I just happened to looked it up that day. And sure enough, we lived in the ghetto. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, we didn't accomplish too much. We had some fine pronouncements about it was our right to move wherever we were able to live. If you had the money, you should be allowed to buy a house there, like anybody else. And one or two other pronouncements, I can't recall them specifically now, but evidently, like I say, I was sold down the river because I served only 1 year, and I told them that, well, I'd be happy to serve another year. Or maybe it was 2 years, I don't know. And they appointed somebody else in my place who had been in Ipsy about a month. Could have been much over a month. He's dead. I won't bring his name up. Of course, the thing just continued to go on down. They appointed one of the white lawyers who, I'm not sure he was really a racist, though, and yet he must have been, because his job there was to obstruct everything positive that I would bring up. Mrs. Milford's job was that also. I don't know whether or not the Chamber of Commerce appointed her, but some of the organizations, I had a lot to do with it. But I have to give that lawyer much respect, because I remember my oldest daughter was the queen of the, what do they call that, the graduation time of high school.
Commencement ceremony? Commencement graduation?
Yeah, this was some kind of queen. And of course, she was the first black one, naturally.
Oh, the sorority and fraternity.
No, it wasn't that. It was a school thing. The kids in school voted. And they voted her into this position as queen. And of course, her escort was this lawyer's son. And they went along perfectly okay. So I imagined if he had had some liberality in him, or liberalness, whatever the word is, I'm sure that wouldn't have happened. That's just an interesting aside that so many of those things come up.
What do you see?
We got a long ways from this background and training. I'll tell you about my first case that I sent over to St. Joe. St. Joe's, you know, is a great hospital over there in Ann Arbor. And I think about the second patient I had wanted to go to the hospital and needed to go to the hospital. She's since deceased. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in mentioning her name. And, I knew that you had to have some money. And I'd heard that the Byer Hospital here in town, don't go, this is from black folks, naturally. Don't go there, man, they'll kill you, this, that, and the other, and they're very prejudiced, and this, that, and the other. And in the meantime, of course, I had applied to get on the staff, and I had some recommendations from the right people, like the county health officer who wanted somebody else around here. So, whom I had met over at the School of Public Health. So this lady went out in about 10 minutes, came back with $200, which was all that she needed to get in the hospital. She was sick enough. So I called, and the first thing I got was, well, what's her name, of course? Well, the second thing was, what color is she? Well, and, you know, the war was going on, and black folks were in the Army and the Navy, I guess, and probably polishing the officer's boots in the Navy, but they were in the Army. You know how they worked in the Army in those days. Service Corps in the Army, like loading ships and unloading ships and that type of thing. Although, I guess there's more glory in getting out there getting shot, shot at. But anyhow, I just didn't understand her, and I asked to speak to her supervisor, whoever it was. The first person evidently was a clerk there. So this person, after one or two words, came up, what color is she? We have to know that, you know. My God. So I said, let me speak to the administrator, who was a Sister Philippa, one of the nuns in those days, you see. The nuns have not had charge of the hospital recently, but they used to have charge of, I don't remember that order, whatever they represented, but so we talked back and forth, and of course everything she said made me angry, everything I said made her angry. Well, finally she comes up with this question. You see, I still had my Brooklynese type of accent, so she didn't know what I was. So finally she says, well, how would you like it for a colored woman to be put in the same room with your sister? So I called her everything but a child of the king. And I try not to use those curse words or whatever they call profanity, I guess that's a better term. But I called her everything else. Certainly she was a Hitler in black clothing and all that, that black thing, big figure, all of it. I was leaning towards the Catholic Church, so you know what that did to my thoughts about the Catholic Church. No way. And of course, I guess I'm a loser because I've never had too much for St. Joseph's Hospital to do for me, although my wife's been a patient there in more recent years. I never did apply for the staff over at the new hospital. I probably should have done that. When I say apply for, I mean apply for admission to the staff. And after getting this degree in public health, I think they call it Master of Public Health, I should have been in the public health service. But here again, they didn't want any blacks in the public health service at that time, not the uniform public health service. I think they had one fellow whose job it was to go around and show these films and make lectures and things like that.
Did you ever use that degree?
No, I never. That's why one reason I say it's a waste of time. But there's an ample opportunity because my major field was venereal disease control. And God knows if you have an army out in the field, you know, in foreign countries, they're going to have need for people who have some knowledge of venereal disease. No, never.
Wasn't that a 2-year degree too?
No, that was a 1-year degree. You had to write a thesis, and this is how I met my wife, largely because she came over and helped me work on it. She did most of the typing.
How many kids do you have?
I have 3 children.
3? What are their names?
Well, one's named Michael, that's the oldest. Michael Thomas, and the next is Anne Elizabeth. And the most recent, or the youngest, is Leah Louise.
What are their ages?
Michael, let me see, is probably 36. And Anne is 2 years younger, 34, if I'm not mistaken now. And Leah is 27, I think. Something like that. Yeah, it must be if Anne is 34 and Leah is 7 years younger.
And what was your father's and mother's first and last name?
Okay, my mother's name was Maddie, first name, and before she married was Harrison. She was from North Carolina, Kenansville, not too far from the Marine base down there, and Camp Lejeune. And my father's name was Thomas, and he's from the West Indies, from Antigua. They had lived in, I was born in Patterson, so they came to Patterson way back there in 1902 or something. But my father came here as a sailor, and he was always awfully race conscious, too. He could tell you some tales if he were alive, but we were fortunate in having both of them here with us for a while. But she always wanted to go back home, but I regret we could have done so if someone had pushed me, I guess. Never got around to carrying, but several years after he died, my wife and I toured the whole of the Caribbean. That was over 25 years ago. We had a delightful time, especially in Haiti, where we stayed almost a whole month. But so far as my travels went, I seem to run into racial discrimination. And even recently, I believe the airlines tend to try to discriminate. They do.
That's why I want to ask you that, as a physician and arriving in Atlanta during the early 1940s, what is your assessment of the various black leaders today in Ypsilanti? What do you see their role as? And thirdly, have the black ministers assumed any degree of leadership in this community present, you know?
I'll answer the last one first. I think the ministers have become somewhat more aware of.
The question I was asking Dr. Bass, in terms of asking about your observations, have you seen any significant progress in community life in Ypsilanti in terms of progress on the part of black leaders, on the part of education, you know, the educational enhancement of the people in Ypsilanti and race relations?
I think so. In all of those areas that you mentioned, you know, I started talking with you about the ministers because that was really the last specific question you asked before. And I say that I believe they have assumed some awareness about the problems that we may have. And
could you mention some of the
ministers? Sense of the need for improvement. You know, we haven't reached the millennium by any means. I guess we never will until all of us turn white, which means never. Employment is still a problem, I think. But beyond that, this applies not only to black folks, white folks too, I have to admit. The family life is lacking.
Elaborate on that.
What I mean is training that these kids should get at home. And I don't know where else they're going to get it. They're not going to get it in school initially. You got to start with these kids when they're 4 or 5 years old. I'm not too much of a teacher, an educator in that sense. But I know that this is a fact from what I can read. And I read a very interesting article, I won't go into that, about the fact that the black family life is awfully lacking. It's really at the bottom of the ladder, which is in keeping with the fact that black folks in around the world are at the bottom of the ladder. There's no question about that. And I have to admit we're at the bottom of the ladder here in Ypsilanti still, too. But we cannot get, at least when I was working more intimately with the NAACP, we couldn't get more than, on an average, of 8 people out to a meeting. We'd meet once a month. We found that the best time for a meeting was a Sunday evening. We tried various times during the week, various days, and you just couldn't get anybody out. So we settled on that. We still have the meetings on the last Sunday of every month. But because of the fact that all the churches are always having various programs, they have a right to have these too. But this is only one Sunday a month that we have this meeting, but there's no cooperation at all from the ministers on trying to fit in with the time of the meeting of the NAACP. I still would say that the NAACP is still the primary organization in America or in the world through which the black folks are going to really make any headway with putting down segregation and achieving first-class citizenship here in the United States. So just being treated like a man, like a human man throughout the world.
In other words, are you suggesting that the social consciousness on the part of black families or black Ypsilanti is very low in terms of being aware of certain things?
I can say that, yeah. I can say that. For example, where in the world can the parents be if they allow these kids to just wantonly go by the school and break out all the windows? See? Or if you walk up there on Michigan Avenue and see that's housing, that public housing up there on Michigan Avenue, just off from 2nd Avenue. They tried to improve it some, but it's still very much unkempt just because people go by and throw their paper or whatever it is that they don't want, they just throw it here and throw it there. Children don't take going to school seriously. Some of them go there simply because they can play basketball, which seems to be the favorite sport, and I guess football is next. But then for something like track, they're not the least bit interested in coming out for because, well, I guess I can see that too.
Whose fault is that?
It's hard work. That's part of the family. I mean, the parents, for one thing, too.
What do you see?
I think they're obligated to show them where a healthy body is a very fine asset. And one way you can get it without kind of getting you down is by participating in athletics. They will participate to some degree, but haphazardly, see. And some of them, of course, are only in it for the money that they think they can get out of it. And I say this is not necessarily a noble reason, but it's pretty good. If you can make the money that these people make nowadays in athletics.
What do you see as some alternative to this problem affecting the families in Ypsilanti?
Well, here, again, and I think that they could get a very excellent insight if this could be preached to them in church every Sunday or in Sunday school, too. Now, I didn't get into the teenage pregnancies. I really don't know what the comparative ratio as to the number of teenage pregnancies is, black versus white here in Ypsilanti. But we still have too many teenage pregnancies. And it's not unusual at all to see some of these, oh boy, to listen to some of these small kids speak or talk to one another. See, using those four-letter words means nothing to them. They don't care where they use them. And I know that's the family responsibility to bring them up more properly, to show that those are expressions that you just don't use. None of them, I hate to say, I don't want to say none, I don't mean that. they seldom know much about the classics. I mean, about reading. I won't go into music, of course. I admit so many of them don't care about anything other than the popular rock and roll or whatever it is, or that funk is, or that funk roll or something. I don't know.
Who are some of the major political leaders in the community in terms of their role?
Well, I think I better try to back just a little bit on this minister thing, too. I think the church is one of the most powerful organizations and moving organizations that black folks have in America at the present time. And the church could do so much more if it would reach on out in a practical way and try to do this. And you have to bring the white church into this also. And I should mention some of the ministers who I've noticed that participated in community affairs, other than just having their own dinners and so forth and so on. Like Reverend Hopkins, he's been a supporter of the NAACP, and Reverend S.L. Roberson. And frankly, I just haven't seen any of the others ever at an NAACP meeting. I can't say whether or not they ever mentioned the NAACP meeting, because I haven't been able to get to all of the churches. I would say, I have to retract just a little bit, at the time that the NAACP needed that money to fight that case down there in Mississippi, you know, you may remember that, where they were suing black folks because they had boycotted these white places, you know, can you imagine? So we were able to go around, and I think I got donations from all of the black churches with very few exceptions. There might have been two. I know this because I did all of the going around and getting this money. And some of them came up with sizable amounts, like $100 even. I will mention the churches, which I remember the churches. I will mention the churches that did so. But some of them came up, you know, with $25, which was more than what we had had. There's no reason in the world why every one of the churches should not be a life member of the NAACP here in Ypsilanti. Not talking about Tougaloo, Mississippi, or someplace maybe where they don't have the financial finesse, but around here where black folks, in a sense, earn about as much as white folks in the plants when they're working. You asked me who would be the... Was that the question?
Yeah, I asked you to name some of the political leaders.
Oh, political leaders. Well, certainly the mayor, George Donald Goodman. And I think John still is a political leader. John Burton, that would be. Some hard put. Amos used to be one. Amos Washington, but he was on the other side of the fence. He was a Republican, but still he was a good man. He just, you know, believed in his convictions. There's nothing wrong with being a Republican if you can prove to me why you want to be a Republican. I mean, if you have good reasons for being a Republican, okay. I'm trying to think of the others. Well, there were two or three councilmen. Doug Harris has been a councilman on and off, and member of the school board. Baby's a member of the school board, but he's not a political leader, I'd say. And Jerome Strong, still trying to wrap poor Jerome up in with up the communism flag or something. I don't know, but
Jerome Strong.
This is what there many people try to say, I think. But Jerome, I think, is primarily a black person. Mm-hmm. At least he works with the NAACP. His wife does too. I can't think of any other outstanding. If you name people who run for various offices around town, like made around the area, I can mention one or two others. But you asked me about political leaders, and I think those are the largely the political leaders.
How has the black community fared under under the various kinds of policies and things like, you know, in terms of race relations? Has the black community grown or has it suffered, you know, in Ypsilanti?
Well, the fact that there's no sufficient progress, it means that there certainly has been some suffering, there's been some shortcoming. But on the other hand, I think the progress that has been made is about comparable to the progress in any other relatively small town. The Undertakers, they have a closed business here, more or less.
Explain.
There's no competition. So
there are no black morticians here?
There is one black mortician family here, and that's the Lucille's, they call it. There used to be two or three, but they're not here anymore. They're doing all right. The liquor store is doing all right. I call it Bill and Jim's over there. They're doing all right. I think it's still black owned. I understand that previous owner sold out to another black. I understand that. I'm not sure. Oh, then Forbes the Builder has done exceedingly well because of the area that he's in. And
what's that area?
Well, he's just a general contractor. He's a grade A mason, so far as that goes. Constructioneer, really. Then John Barfield with his engineering firm and custodial firm has done exceedingly well right from the ground on up. But just to name names, be frank, those people, the latter two, haven't projected themselves into actually working at the grassroots in the community. Yeah, they've done well. I think the Barfields will gross $8 million of dollars this year, if I'm not mistaken. So that puts them up there with the in that first 100 Negro businesses, black businesses, which that magazine usually outlines.
Black Enterprise.
Black Enterprise, yeah. And Forbes, well, he didn't get in it, but Forbes has done very well financially, I'm sure. So I think the community has made some strides because we live all over the area now. We don't just live on the south side. And there's some beautiful places that black folks live in. I don't live in one of those, but many blacks do. If you ride along the Huron River Drive, are you familiar with it, Tito?
Yeah, I live there.
Out there where A.P. Marshall is, you know, out that way. Well, that was just unimaginable, say, 20 years ago. No way.
All white.
Well, there wasn't anything much along there anyhow except the beautiful Huron River and the home of one of the leading architects, Ganoff, out there. I regret to say again, it's worth repeating, that these people who've done so well with their businesses just have not projected themselves into the community to work even near the grass level.
What do you think
the
they need
store,
to do?
Liquor store, neither the Undertakers, neither the.
Yeah.
I think Barfield is a member of the a life member of the NAACP, but not any of these others. You shouldn't have to ask them.
Right.
It's not my obligation only. That means it's as much for them, even more for them than it is for me, if you look at it that way. Yeah, well, we have several school principals, too. I think there are two black ones now. Or no, there are more than that. The principal of the high school is black. And Leo, the principal of the Perry School, which was the first black, all-black school, town that used to be called the Harriet Street School. Dr. Perry was a longtime member of the school board.
How do you envision black leadership in the future? Do you think it'll get better, become more prominent? Will they have a more active role? You know.
Well, that's the only way. The only thing that can happen is so far down. it's kind of at base right now. The only thing for it to do is to go up. I don't see how things, well, things could get better if Mr. Reagan has his way, I presume. As I heard him mention now that everybody will be able to do so much better that America has become more conservative in any number of ways other than just passing those budget cuts along with the tax program, meaning, so far as I can understand, that a lot of the social programs of which so many blacks are dependent on for making it here in America are going to be cut severely. The affirmative action is just a thing of the past now. So, and a lot of folks just didn't like that.
Well, right back to marriage equality.
Well, we have turned, that's right, circle around back to the opposite way now. Yeah.
What we're going to do is have this tape transcribed and typed out, and I'll mail you a copy in the mail where you have an opportunity to peruse it and make any additions or deletions that you'd like to have out or in.
Yeah. Okay. This is okay with me. I don't know if there's anything that I've said that I can't say down in City Hall at the height of the London Council meeting.
Thank you.